Good evening. I'm Glenn Altshuler, Chair of the Sesquicentennial Commission, and I have a brief announcement before our presentation begins. As many of you know, Jimmy Smits, Cornell MFA, class of 1982, cannot be with us tonight because of the death of his mother. We have conveyed to Jimmy the thoughts and prayers of the entire Cornell community. Along with his regrets, Jimmy sends best wishes to his fellow Cornellians for a joyous Charter Day weekend. He and we are grateful to Lawrence Drozd, formerly with Cornell's theater department and now a development officer with the College of Engineering, for joining us to read the words of Andrew D. White, Ezra Cornell, and E.B. White. Thanks to you for coming this evening. Our show will begin shortly.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, and welcome to a celebration in words and music in honor of Cornell University's sesquicentennial. My name is David Felshew, and I have served with the Sesquicentennial Planning Committee for more than 4 years. That may seem like a long time, but it actually took me 3.5 years to learn how to pronounce sesquicentennial.
And I'm Robin Davison. David, sesquicentennial. Got it?
Got it.
Got it, okay. Tonight's event is special in so many ways. To see the Cornell Chorus, the Glee Club, the symphony on stage at the same time.
And to hear these gifted students perform songs and music by distinguished Cornell composers. Roberto Sierra, Stephen Stuckey, and Kevin Ernst.
And to hear the founding words of Ezra Cornell and A.D. White and the wry observations of E.B. White.
And to have Cornell's president, David Scorton, on stage to share in the celebration. And I do have to make an announcement at this time. Cornell is the only Ivy League institution to have a dance video of its president go viral. Way to go, David Scorton.
All my brothers and sisters and me, we are family. All right.
Seriously, we believe that this next 60 minutes or so will offer you an indelible and wonderful, rare treat.
And it's truly remarkable to remember. Remember this, that the Civil War had been over for less than 3 weeks when Cornell was founded in 1865.
It was a turbulent time captured in the spiritual you're about to hear, When I'm Gone.
I'm gone. The founders of Cornell, Andrew Dixon White and Ezra Cornell, met in the mid-1860s. Both of them were members of the New York State Senate, and there they conceived the idea of creating a great university in upstate New York. White wrote to a friend in 1862 about his dream. This is what he wrote. There is needed a truly great university. First, to secure a place where the most highly prized instruction may be afforded to all, regardless of sex or color. Secondly, to turn the current of mercantile morality which has so long swept through this land. Thirdly, to temper and restrain the current of military passion which is to sweep through the land hereafter. Fourthly, to afford an asylum for science, where truth shall be sought for truth's sake, where it shall not be the main purpose of the faculty to stretch or cut science exactly to fit revealed religion. Fifthly, to afford a center and a school for a new literature, not graceful and indifferent to wrong, but earnest, nerved, and armed to battle for the right. Sixthly, to give a chance for instruction in moral, philosophy, history, and political economy, unwarped to suit present abuses in politics and religion. Seventhly, to secure the rudiments, at least, of legal training in which legality shall not crush humanity. Eighthly, to modify the existing plan of education in matters of detail where it is vain to hope improvement from the existing universities. Ninthly, to afford a nucleus around which liberally minded men of learning, men scattered throughout the land, comparatively purposeless and powerless, should cluster, making this institution a center from which ideas and men shall go forth to bless the nation during ages. My soul is in this. The offer of my fortune and my life for it is not the result of any sudden whim. It is the result of years of thought and yearning for better things in our beloved country. In 1864, Ezra Cornell offered his financial support and a place to put the new university. This is what he wrote. I will submit for your consideration the following proposition. If you will locate the college at Ithaca, I will give you for that object a farm of 300 acres of first quality land, desirably located overlooking the village of Ithaca and Cayuga Lake, and within 10 minutes walk of the Cornell Library, the churches, the rail station, and steamboat landing. I will also erect on that farm suitable buildings for the use of the college and give an additional sum of money to make up in the aggregate of $300,000 on condition that the legislature will endow the college with at least $30,000 per annum from the Congressional Agricultural College Fund, and thus place the college upon a firm and substantial basis which shall be a guarantee of its future prosperity and usefulness, and give to the farmers, sons of New York, an institution worthy of the Empire State. 4 years later, at the inauguration ceremonies, Ezra Cornell described his hopes for the university that bore his name. This is what he said. I hope we have laid the foundation of an institution which shall combine practical with liberal education, which shall fit the youth for our country, for the professions, the farms, the mines, the manufacturers, for the investigations of science, and for mastering all the practical questions for life with success and honor. I believe that we have made the beginning of an institution which will prove highly beneficial to the poor young men and the poor young women of our country. Cornell Class of 1921, Editor-in-Chief of the Cornell Daily Sun, brother of Phi Gamma Delta Fraternity, E.B. White, became an editor and frequent contributor to the New Yorker magazine and the author of children's classics Stuart Little and Charlotte's Web. In 1959, he revised The Elements of Style, published 40 years earlier by his English professor William Strunk, Jr. In 2011, Time magazine named Strunk and White one of the 100 best and most influential books written in English in the 20th century. In 1933, White wrote an essay, "I'd Send My Son to Cornell," playing on the song, "Don't Send My Boy to Harvard." This is what he wrote. Cornell is in Ithaca, New York, where Greek meets Indian. It is the university which best combines the classic ideals of Pericles with the practical success of the Iroquois. The name of the town is Greek. The statues in the basement of Goldwin Smith Hall are Greek. A couple of the restaurants are Greek. Yet the Attic tone of the place is tempered by the savage history of the locality. One need only look out any classroom window to realize that beauty lay on these hills long before culture arrived to clutter it up. I suppose the real reason I would send my son there is because it's the only university attained by traveling up the valley of the Catatonk. There are today other means of getting there, I don't doubt. Freshmen are dropped off from passing Buicks and come in with the morning milk. But a New York boy still has the opportunity of changing at Owego to the spur line of the Delaware, Lackawanna, and Western Railroad, the most romantic journey of my life. Cornell is not only big and high, it is cosmopolitan and friendly, and it is an infinitely various place. Its students do not run to type. On the campus are found both sexes, all colors, all beliefs, from the most conservative fraternity sophomore with Republican tendencies and a contempt for the irregular, to the bloody-eyed anarchist who wants to tear the vines right off the buildings. In sending off a son, I suppose academic standing should be considered. I don't know how Cornell rates. As at other colleges, at Cornell, one chooses a certain course because it happens to occur miraculously at 10 o'clock, thereby fitting in between one that occurs at 9 o'clock and one which occurs at 11. This is the universal accident of erudition, a touching quality. As at other universities, at Cornell, the student is subjected to the benign influence of two or three dozen professors, of which three or four usually manage to get to first base. I know that Cornell turns out good doctors, lawyers, engineers, actors, farmers, poets, statesmen, architects, and salesmen. It seems to me its batting average is pretty high. I'd send my son to Cornell because passing the vet college where dogs howl by day and night, he will be reminded that even in the almost perfect state toward which his education is wafting him, All dogs will have worms and be disconsolate. I'd send my son to Cornell because it has the most perilous topography in 16 counties. I'd send him there to walk up Six Mile Creek in the early wetness of a recalcitrant spring. I would send my son to Cornell because it would be impossible for him to come home frequently. When you get to Ithaca, you stay put. The ice forms early, and you buy a sheepskin coat and dig in for the winter along about the 1st of November. I would send him there to walk up from the Sun offices at 5:45 and see the lighthouses on the inlet. I would send him to doze over supplementary reading in the library and to explore Varna, Enfield, Trumansburg, Renwick, West Danby, and the pool below the suspension bridge. And I will be disturbed if he fails to grow homesick on one of those Sunday afternoons in the first fall. And yes, by the way, E.B. White's son did go to Cornell. Guys.
Cornell, of course, was a global institution from the beginning, welcoming international students in its very first decade. And its global reach has only grown to the present day, with graduates living and working in every part of the globe. With the chorus in Glee Club now, we'll sing some music from three of those continents, from East Asia, from Northern Europe, and from Southern Africa, all cultures not just studied and celebrated here, but also represented at Cornell.
Oh,
There's a new landmark on Leib Slope, the Sesquicentennial Grove. Carved into stone walkways and benches are the thoughts of men and women who deeply believed in the idea of Cornell. Reading their words, I couldn't help but think of the wisdom of the baseball great Yogi Berra, who said, as you may know, if you say you done it and you done it, it ain't bragging. This weekend, we celebrate the so many people who for so many years in so many places have worked together and done it.
Tonight, David and I would like to share with you some quotations from the Sesquicentennial Grove.
Ezra Cornell was self-educated, and he was determined to create, as he famously phrased it, an institution where any person could find instruction in any study. A.D. White agreed. He promised that Cornell would be
a place where the most highly prized instruction may be afforded to all, regardless of sex or color.
The curriculum of this new university would be revolutionary.
And White and Cornell understood that a university should be
dedicated to science, where truth shall be sought for truth's sake.
With a curriculum that would be at the same time
fit the youth of our country for the professions, the farms, the mines, and the manufactories. At the turn of the century, Cornell President Jacob Gould Sherman declared,
Cornell must hold all subjects equally reputable. The analysis of soils is as important as the analysis of literature.
But the university's second president, Charles Kendall Adams, had said it first proudly and boldly.
Useful things are taught here. Right? Like, yeah. Okay.
In 1940, on the eve of a world war that would threaten democracy and call into question basic human decency,
historian Carl Becker described the Cornell tradition.
It allows the maximum of freedom because it can rely so confidently upon a sense of personal responsibility for making good use of it.
And then during the Cold War of the 1950s,
Cornell's president, Dean W. Mallott, steadfastly defended academic freedom, demanding,
these professors of ours must have the right to profess. They must not be scourged from the public forum.
The first female professor at Cornell, Anna Comstock, gave thanks for a place
where no one questioned my beliefs. I became tolerant. Cornell taught me to respect the religious beliefs of others. Cornell taught me to do that.
Education is an inspiration, a taking hold of a broader life.
And with these words, Professor Liberty Hyde Bailey, a self-taught plant scientist who shaped the formation of the College of Agriculture and whose name is on the front of this very building, challenged Cornell students and the institution itself.
Frank H.T. Rhodes, Cornell president from 1977 to 1995, gave voice to the late 20th century meaning of Bailey's challenge. He said,
Cornell has not been content for the world to come to campus. It has also reached out to the world. Its land grant mission has been writ large.
And under President Hunter Rawlings, the West Campus house system became a reality.
It created a wonderful undergraduate dormitory environment to nurture intellectual inquiry and to encourage daily contact with world-class scholars.
We aim, President Rawlings said, to be the best research university for undergraduate education in the country.
So the Sesquicentennial Grove is open-ended. More quotations will be added as the journey continues.
It was, after all, the university's first opening ceremonies in 1866-68.
That Ezra Cornell pointed to the three lonely stone buildings on the Arts Quad, and he proclaimed,
"We have not invited you to see a university finished, but to see one begun." Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So many students have given of their talents to make this a very special evening, but Chris Kim and I want to recognize a particular set, those members of the class of 2015 from the chorus, the glee club, and the orchestra. I'd like to ask you to stand while we acknowledge you. You have given... You... Not just tonight, but for many nights over the last 4 years, you have poured forth so much musical, beautiful music in this hall and in other halls around campus, and also led the ensembles that you joined just so recently and took on that mantle of leadership so beautifully. We will miss you greatly, and we hope you will take this music into the world and continue to lead as you have here. So here's to the class of 2015. There's another class that I'd like to recognize, and you'll understand why in a moment. It's the class of 1957. It is through their generosity that we were able to embark upon a remarkable project all in the course of one calendar year, this last year, which was to make the first new recording of the Cornell songs in over 40 years, which we are pleased to announce is being released today. And which you're about to hear a remarkable a set of excerpts, 5 tracks from it, newly commissioned by Cornell graduate Tom Schneller, orchestrations that bring the orchestra and the choirs together on some of Cornell's favorite songs. Should you be so tempted, we'd be happy to sell you a copy right after the concert, right in front of Bailey Hall. But we are thrilled to present tonight for you live the premiere of Tom Schneller's orchestral arrangements of 5 Cornell songs.
bigger stage.
Oh.
We traditionally end concerts with the evening song and the alma mater, but I am thrilled to welcome, on behalf of all of us, a very special guest soloist on the flute for the evening song, President David Skorton. And I am fairly confident that David would be equally happy to welcome you along on the second verse.
Well, what an evening, what a night of words and music toward Mike Cornell. I want to take a moment before we get to the alma mater for us to honor Chris Kim and Robert Isaacs, who have done such magic for us tonight. And Chris and Robert join me in asking you to honor the best thing about this university for 150 years, the Cornell students. Woo! Now for the alma mater, I'm going to ask if all of those who contributed to this magic tonight can come up. The readers, the composers, anyone who had a piece of this, please come on up and join me and join the symphony and the Glee Club and chorus in our beautiful alma mater. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful evening and a wonderful weekend. And go Big Red!
One, five, oh! One, five, oh! One, five, oh!